You are listening to episode 125 of the Africana Woman podcast, Who Are You? With Chishimba Kachasa. My name is Chulu, your host. Let's go. I'm not coping. I want to complain about it, but I'm not going to, because what you focus on magnifies. But when you see me on these streets with bloodshot eyes, just know your sister has not suddenly started drinking kachasu. She is just tired. This week in the Africana Woman Visionaries, we have been doing a mindfulness 7-day challenge. And as it happens, today is day 5, where we get to practice gratitude. Therefore, instead of complaining, I am going to share with you 5 things I am grateful for today. So, number 1, I am grateful that cohort 2 have successfully completed the personal brand course. Despite being interrupted with load shedding, we managed to do all 10 modules on the scheduled dates and times. The ladies have been amazing, and it is such an honor and a privilege to watch their metamorphosis into the most stunning butterflies. Number 2. On 4th April 2024, 4/4/24, we sold our first ticket for the Africana Woman Festival. I will forever remember this day, that someone believed in the dream and purchased a ticket to what will be the biggest festival in Africa in the next 10 years. I am not afraid of humble beginnings. We all have to start from one. So thank you, Mrs. L, for being the first to light the torch. Number 3, I am so grateful. I am so, so grateful for my coach, Danielle Dalcotivo. Everyone needs support, guys, even a leader. And I didn't realize that I was spending so much energy supporting others and filling other people's cups whilst mine was running dry. I just let it go for so long. And right at the brink of collapse, Danielle found me. What a godsend. When I talk about leaders, I mean as a stay-home mom, you are a leader. You deserve support. As the breadwinner of your extended family, honey, you deserve support. Leaders are all around us. They do not always hold the title of CEO. So my prayer is that if that's you, if you are a leader without support, I hope you find yourself a tribe of Danielles. Number 4, I am grateful for my body. Guys, it does the most, okay? It functions automatically without command. Like, I don't have to tell it to breathe. It just breathes by itself. It just knows and keeps all the systems working. My body is tough. It goes through weekly exercises with grace, even though I am convinced my coach has a vendetta against my body. But she comes out stronger. My body carries me everywhere that I need to go. My body feeds me. My body protects me. It truly is a masterpiece. Number 5, to be honest, I can write a very long list of things I am grateful for. But since I have to choose just one more, It would have to be music. Music is my first love. At a very young age, I discovered its ability to shift my energy almost instantly. It is the thing that keeps me company the most, and it is the beat of my heart. I don't know, do you write a gratitude list every day or every now and then? If you don't, I highly recommend that you do. Try it. But here's the thing. Don't just say the words for lip service or to fill the list. No. The power is actually in really feeling that gratitude. Feel it in your heart, in your soul. It's quite a beautiful experience. So I started off by letting you know, this week has been wild. It's been wild. And at the same time, extraordinary. I would not trade my life for anything else. So, do you want to win a free ticket to the Africana Women Festival on the 2nd to the 3rd of August? Guess what? You can. All you have to do is find Africana Woman on LinkedIn or Instagram. So find the giveaway post, read the instructions carefully, and then enter. It's that simple. Okay, that's it. That's all you have to do. Just find us on LinkedIn or Instagram. So you are going to get a 2-day red carpet treatment. This could be yours for free. So I'll also drop the link in the show notes as well. Go enter. Entry into the giveaway ends on the 15th of April, and then we're announcing the winner on the 18th. All right. So today on the podcast, our guest is someone I secretly admire from afar. She has a brilliant podcast and is an all-round amazing human being. So please enjoy the conversation. Chishimba Kachasa is the host and creator of Kachihande Podcast. She is a corporate and transactional lawyer with over 10 years of experience. Chishimba is an associate partner of Chivesa Kunda and Company, where she heads the corporate advisory and capital markets department. Chishimba writes short stories under Here Is to Middles, which, like Kachihande, provides a platform for destiny-shaping expressions that target toxic trends, cultures, and ideologies while advocating for wellness, healing, and development. Please help me welcome Chishimba to the Africana Woman, Mike. Hi.
Hi, Jennifer, how are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I know, like the beginning has been rocky, but we're gonna do this.
Yes, but here we are. Thank
So
you so much for
welcome.
having me.
I'm
Thank
excited.
you.
Okay.
See, I'm nervous. I'm nervous.
Are you nervous when you're the one? You're always on the podcast. Like, how can you be nervous?
No, it's the other side of it, right? Like you sit and then you listen and you ask questions. No one ever wants to be asked questions. So, but here we are. Thank you so much for having me on an award-winning podcast, by the way. I've made it now, guys. Well done for
Thank
the wins of
you.
2023.
Thank you. Okay, so let's get started. It's very easy. So, first question, what is your favorite childhood memory?
My favorite childhood memory. You know, I have many, but I have a recent one because I thought about this recently. There was a year I made the school team athletics. You see, right now I don't look like I can run, but listen, once upon a time, I was an aspiring athlete. And even though I was just a reserve, guys, I made the school team. And this year, I ran again and I had to send a video to my family and I was so disrespected. But I was saying to them, you know what? I can still make the school team. You know, even though watching the video, I was like, was I running in slow-mo? But I was really running. So I think it what I remember was the year I made the athletic school team when I was in primary school. I may have been like in grade 5 or 6, but yes, it was making the athletic school team.
That's a
Because this is
big,
the recent one I dug up. Yeah.
yeah, no, that's a big deal. That is a big, big deal. So, congratulations to you. Okay. So, where did you grow up?
I grew up in Mufulira and Kalulushi. So
Ah,
on the
really?
Copper. Yes. So I lived in those two towns primarily. I was born in Mufulira. Then we moved to Kalulushi for a bit, moved back to Mufulira only to move back to Kalulushi. So just those two towns. Yeah.
See,
And the Koppal.
I used to go to Moof when I was younger, in
Yeah.
secondary. One of my friends lived there. So I know a little bit about the layouts, but I think I don't understand how Kalulushi, like, is it even a town? Like, what is it? Like, how does it
First of all,
function?
first of all, how dare you? But second of all, we may just have one main road, it feels like. But so Kalulushi is one of those very small towns. And I remember when we moved back, I was in grade 11. And I was, you know, I me, you know, met up with friends and we walked around. It's literally one of those places. And this is before there was the Catholic University, and now there's like students there now. But we knew everybody. Like everybody knew everybody, such that when you moved, people noticed that you had moved because they'll be like, who's that? They must be new. But it was one of those very small towns, which because I like small towns, and for me, even now, it feels like heaven. But I realize that when we say we're going to town, we really mean we're going to Kitwe. It's one of the last towns that probably still has as like a main shop. You know, those shops where you're like pointing, like, give me that one. Yes. So that's Kalulushi, aka heaven.
I
But
love
yeah.
that. I've got a friend who lives there now, and you know, it's going on. You're saying like, there's no Shoprite. I'm like, dude, there's no Shoprite.
There's
There's no like campaign. Like, what's going on? How is this a town?
I mean, it's a look now when you go to like Kitwe and you go to like Debonairs, they'll tell you like how far they deliver, and it's not even in Kalulushi town, it's still like more on the outside, which is still very new. So, and it's one of those places where, I mean, I always say to people, the reason why I'm still like a takeaway person is because I didn't grow up with those things. But I probably think even kids who are growing up there now, like takeaway, you have to go to Kitwe because it's still such a home place. Yeah. But it's a nice, I love it. I really do. I go there to hide.
You see,
Love it.
yeah, I used to do that with Kabwe. So I was living in Lusaka, and then my mom was in Kabwe. So then when we go there, it'll be like, oh, hiding. And literally, as soon as I get there, I'm asleep. I'm just like zonked out, like finished, you know?
I literally stopped doing everything. Like I stopped even answering calls. I'm like, listen, I am at home. I do. But see, how can you talk about Kalushi when you that way, guys? No, sorry. Sorry.
At least Kabwe
What?
has a mall. At the very least, there's even a
But
mall.
weren't you like the last place to get like mobile network? Because I remember that Kawe used to have this. It was like the Bermuda Triangle. Like you would drive back and then your signal would come back somewhere, like
Yes.
Fringilla. See,
But you know
it was a.
what? What's
Yeah.
actually funny is that what I found was that the internet, for example, in Lusaka
Yeah.
was lower. Like there was too much traffic, so it would be very slow. Whereas when I'm
Right.
doing recordings, like for the podcast and stuff, and I'm doing them in Kitwe, it's so much smoother because there's just less people. You know what I
Really?
mean? So then I was
Because there's
like, I can
people.
do this remote working thing, so it'll work.
No, it'll work. No, but I mean, okay, Kabwe is allegedly a city, but I'm sure it's still like a small town.
It's a
So small
small
towns are
town.
nice. I mean, I say it's allegedly a city. Allegedly. I don't know. Anyway.
Yeah. So, all right, ma'am, you are a lawyer, you're an author, you're a podcaster. Did you always want to be a lawyer?
No. So I initially wanted to be a doctor for, I think, no reason other than I think that's what you were supposed to want to do, right? Until I saw, like, I realized I actually don't like blood. And so how will this thing work if you don't like blood, right? So then I said to myself, okay, I think I'm gonna be a lawyer. And I think I may have been like 12-ish when I, or like 11 when I made that decision. And then I read my first John Grisham novel and I was like, yes, of course I want to be a lawyer. So then I settled on that. And then I just didn't have any other. So there were a lot of people who will say, like, oh, but she's always wanted to be a lawyer. Because I never changed my mind outside, like when I made the decision that that's what I was going to do. I was like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. So I then made the decision. But obviously, the thing about law is like you fall in and out of love with it. It's a weird relationship. So, but then because I had never thought of like anything else, I'm like, okay, so we're going to stick with this. I mean, I say that and I do like it, love what I do most days. So yes, so I think I wanted to be a lawyer from about age 11, 10, somewhere there. Yeah. And then all these years later, I'm
You're
still
still doing
something.
it. But that's
Yeah.
good. When I was young, they asked me, what do you want to be? I said, I want to be a judge. Then they told me, no,
Okay.
you have to be a lawyer first. I said, no, I
Right.
want to be
Oh,
a
you wanted to just
judge.
go straight to the
So yeah, that dream didn't come true, but never mind. I was very disappointed when I heard that, but
Yeah,
it's
because like you have your goal. And I think look, because we don't get to see, I mean, maybe now there's more like representation because I think I met my first actual lawyer the day before I was going to university. Like that was the first, yes. No, that's a lie. When I was doing my A levels, but we didn't get to speak. I was like in the room and I was thought like, oh, that's a lawyer. But the time I actually sat down to speak to a lawyer was the day before I went to university. And he said to me, I hope you're not doing law for philosophical reasons.
okay,
I
meaning.
was not. Like, oh, I want to change the world and I want to. I said, no, I just think. And I remember I said that to him, and the way he looked at me, I said, no, I think I like it and I think I'll be good at it. I said to him. And he was like, okay, at least it's not a philosophical reason. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. But
I
I
mean,
think, yeah.
from your findings, is there a problem with doing it for philosophical reasons?
Yes and no, because the law will break your heart
Oh,
sometimes.
yeah.
Because I think particularly when you are inclined to, so I do corporate law, and I made that decision, I think while I was, no, I think I'd always known I'd wanted to do corporate law, but then when I was in general practice, like doing Ziale and just a little bit after, I confirmed that, yeah, no, I shouldn't do it for reasons that, philosophical reasons. And I'll tell you about this one case that I worked in while I was still a student. It was like a pro bono case that I was helping my principal at the time work on. And it was to have the rights of prisoners declared by the High Court. So their right to life. So these prisoners had HIV. A whole bunch of them, there was like over 100, I think 167 or something, if I remember correctly. So they were living with AIDS and I mean HIV, but the conditions in prison, the diet in prison was obviously not supporting them being able to take ARVs. For them to, you know, have a good diet. So basically the argument was that by them still living in those prison conditions with the disease, their right to life was actually being threatened, right? And I was, you know, reading through this file, and over maybe about 90% of those prisoners were actually in prison for defilement, right? Now, when your mind starts working, you're like, okay, sir, you are in prison serving a sentence for defilement. You are HIV positive. By just implication, there's a minor outside who you have traumatized and possibly infected. So which right to life would you like? I mean, why do you think you should live in any event? And I remember I really struggled drafting that petition. And I think I was sent back a couple of times by my principal then, because he kept saying, remove your emotions from it. And the time he said to me, yes, well done, like this now is the document to file, I said, oh, no. I don't want to be the sort of person who can divorce themselves from, you know, what they believe in and what they feel to do like a great job. And that's why I said, you know, let me just do corporate law where there's no feelings, there's no lives involved, there's, I don't have to start worrying about, you know. So yeah, no. So now when you look at just that experience, like if you're in it because you're a human rights lawyer, it's nice when you're talking about human rights and things like that, when they're like, it's a nice thing, right? But when you really think about it, yes, they are prisoners, they're living with a condition, maybe they should be entitled to a balanced diet. And you can't decide what type of human rights you support while saying, okay, but this one I would not. And so when you read that, yes, even prisoners have a right to life, right, which you may have to, you know, be the proponent of, it does break your heart sometimes. And I don't know who went to argue that case, but I'm just like, it could not have been me to go and stand before the court and actually argue that petition. No. So the law can break your heart like that. It can.
Intriguing. Yeah, but I mean, yeah. You know, the thing about law for me, I think, was the amount of time it takes to become a lawyer. I was like, no, this is like being a doctor, like you. I was like, blood, not for me, not my portion.
Law,
oh my god, it takes that long. And then on top of it, I'm aiming for judge, even longer. I said, no, guys,
of course. Of course, and that's why I think it has to sort of be like a lifelong commitment, because I think, look, everybody has read about the Ziale stats, everybody has seen, you know, the list. You have to want it, or else you will, like, your heart will be broken along the way. And look, my take, and this may not be a lot of lawyers' opinion, is that, look, it's a lot to try and put into one, about a year. I also feel like, and I have seen, that it's not the smartest people who don't pass. Some people, one, may not examine well, the pressure may be too much, or you think a particular way and yet they examine a particular way. And if you don't kind of adjust to all of that, it can be problematic. So no, it's a lifetime commitment. It's supposed to be, look, it's supposed to be done with university within 3 to 4 years. It's supposed to be done with Ziale in about a year. And then you are qualified, but it's never that simple for everyone. Like, for some people, yes, they stick to those timelines, but for some people it's longer. And I think that's why you kind of have to really want it and still be determined. And look, we know people who then used to go on the 5-year ban. After the ban, they still came and did it. But now, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm so removed from how the system works, that's how much trauma I had from Ziali. So I think there's no ban now, but look, if you want it, you can get it, but you really must want it. Yeah. So yeah, it can feel like it's too long.
Okay. So what do you love about what you do right now? Because you said you love it on most days. So what is it that, you know, still excites you 10 years down the line?
What still excites me is, and I was telling this to one of my work colleagues, is I like to first, I mean, it sounds a bit in the clouds, right? But because I do corporate law, it's really someone's dreams, putting it nicely into this legal creation, a company, and then you get to see what this can do. So I think what I love the most is being presented with a problem, reading the law, and even when I find like I've been backed into a corner, finding a way to still legally do what someone needs to do. And I think what I do changes from day to day. Sometimes people think corporate law, because I stare at the screen from sunrise to sunset, that it's not interesting. But I think it is. I work on interesting things anyway. And I also like to see, you know, like because I do capital markets, so like when a prospectus comes out, I like to look at that thing and I'm like, I birthed that thing. I mean, I created that. I helped create that thing. So I think that's what it is, maybe. It doesn't sound as interesting, but truly. But law is not very interesting, if I'm honest. Lawyers will come for me, but guys, we don't always do something that has not been done before.
Yeah. So is corporate law only, like, is corporate law inclusive of, you know, small businesses, you know, SMEs?
Yes.
In what way?
So, because remember, the business, whether it's big or small, is still taking what someone wants to do. Because see, when we deal with companies as a whole, you are creating a separate personality outside of like you, Chilu, right? And we will form this company and create it with literally a life of its own. It can do what it wants within the confines of the law. It can hire people. It can do a lot of these things. But businesses don't just start, you know, from inception. They are not huge, right? You still need to grow it. And actually, part of what I do is to help businesses grow. So whether it's accessing financing, whether it is, you know, partnering with other people to do something. So it does include small businesses. Sometimes, though, when people hear corporate law, they're thinking of all the big conglomerates, but it's different size. And because, you see, they look big now, but they truly started from somewhere. So, yeah, so it includes SMEs. Yeah, it does. It does.
Yeah, you're right, though, especially like with the collaborations, like to make sure that everybody is on the same page about what that collaboration is.
Yes.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah. So now I'm thinking, because of this year, okay, every year I kind of have a word that is guiding, like a guiding word for the year. And this year my guiding word was collaboration.
Okay.
I did a lot of collaborations right from the start, from January through to right now, right? And I know even next year, it's something that I'm continuing to do, because I've seen the benefit. I've seen how well it works. And but then I'm also now thinking that maybe I need to structure those our agreements, because you know when you start, you're kind of just like, oh, handshake.
Yeah.
until it gets too big and you're like, everybody's not fit.
Yes, Yes, and I think that's what sometimes people growing their business or growing their collaborations take for granted. Like, it's nice to just have handshakes and hugs while we are all getting along and this thing is still quite small. And the only way I have actually seen businesses grow is to just make sure that you have your ducks in order all the time, right? And not to underestimate agreeing things in advance. Because if you put everything there, you make sure that you are compliant with small things, because sometimes where businesses struggle to really move from just a micro to a small to then, you know, all those stages is some of those things. We didn't put an agreement in place. And now we're arguing about who takes what and who does what. And then nobody was filing returns and nobody was doing this and that. So in some of those collaborations, what's always important is, have we done what we needed to do? Did we write it down? Because remember, things change. Today, you remember every single point. You and I can have the discussion together, but we bring two, three people in the room and we start remembering things differently. But having the agreement down, having everything in order, really, it's so helpful. It is very, very helpful. Yeah.
What is the messiest situation you've seen? I would imagine it's like a family, like, you know, it's,
And it's always, it always is. So this was not my case, although maybe this year I had to do a divorce, actually, as part of my pro bono. And the woman was really young and the woman was my client. And this man, like, he couldn't even be faithful for like a full 6 months of the marriage. And maybe that's messy because it's fresh in my mind. But it was so horrible. Like, she would go to work and come back and found like used condoms in the bathroom bin. And there was like an STI situation as well. And I'm just like, bruh, this marriage is new, right? So why? So that's like my new messy. That's my new messy one, because I'm just like, you're going to go into the institution, at least take it seriously, please. So anyway, that's my new messy for the year, I think. Yeah.
How do pro bonos work though? Because I'm thinking, is like divorce like under corporate?
No. So this one, the Law Association of Zambia now has a requirement for lawyers to do pro bono matters. So this file, I picked it up from Legal Aid. So there are generally no corporate type things at Legal Aid. So you tend to get divorces, you get land issues at Legal Aid, probate, criminal matters as well. So then you do those matters pro bono, particularly when you pick up the file from Legal Aid, because obviously Legal Aid is quite overwhelmed, but it is the place where if you can't afford a lawyer, you can go. Yeah.
So you can select, like, you know, you have to do one, but you can also select which one.
Yes and no.
Okay.
No, because you pick from what they have, okay. Right?
Yeah.
But yes, you could maybe ask like, oh, do you have these types of files? But generally, they will give you what they have. Yeah. Yeah. So you it's based on just what they have, and I fought this because I hadn't been to court since 2013, I think. Yeah. So I was like, hey, I'm rusty. But it was a good experience. Yeah, it was a good experience.
Did you win? I did.
Yeah, that is, man was deplorable. I mean, guys, how do you disrespect wife like that?
That's good. It must be a nice feeling to win, hey?
Like, yes. Oh. Yes. And it It is. I mean, I get the rush that comes from it. And so because I don't go to trial, right? For me, it's like a transaction closing. That's the rush. Or it's me, closing a file. That's the rush. And I actually realized that, guys, winning feels good. I mean, an addiction is actually not even that difficult because once you get addicted to that dopamine rush, you're gonna keep chasing it. And maybe that's why people think, oh, lawyers are aggressive. No. We're just chasing the dopamine high. So, but yeah.
Yeah, no, I can see that. I can totally see that. 'Cause you get into situations where you normally think you're not, okay, me personally. I normally think I'm not aggressive, competitive rather. And then you just put me in a thing where you say that there's a winner, like there's going to be a winner and a loser. I will not be the latter.
Even the calmest, meekest, guys, we can't help it. Winning feels good.
It
It
does.
does.
It
It
does. It
does.
really does.
It does.
So, lady, now tell me about Catchy Handy. Why did you start it?
Okay, so the stories came before the podcast. So the podcast really, it was kind of actually just pitched to me, right? So I'd been writing these stories, grew a little bit of a following on Facebook, and then I was approached to say, why don't you try a podcast? And I was like, guys, I don't even like how my voice sounds. I can't. And I think, the funny thing about how Kachihande started, it's literally someone like pulling something out of you which like you didn't know was, which can be such a good thing and such a bad thing. So when they convinced me to do it, I was like, okay, what am I gonna do? So I had to go back to my stories and be like, okay, what am I trying to do with my stories? Like, why do I actually write in the first place? And I had just completed a leadership class at church, well, and which has like leadership and critical thinking, which had forced me to like ask myself, like, who am I? Titles, job, and whatever stripped off. Who am I actually? And so when Kachihande was when the podcast was pitched, I had to now like think, okay, based on who I am and what I think I'm on earth for, how can I do this? And I thought that I had wanted to do something that could be relatable in the sense that I wanted to talk to like real people. And not that people who are doing like big things and great things are not real people, but I just think that like we walk among just heroes on a daily basis that we don't appreciate. And so sometimes saying to someone, like, come and tell your story can boost them, but then can also give a boost to someone who is like, oh, okay, I'm exactly like her or like him. So it kind of makes sense that I can also get through this, so I can learn so much about, getting to the other side of this, or just about life itself, by listening to such a person. So that's kind of how Kachihande started. And it's been one of those journeys which has just like it's just been rolling on its own. And there I am, like a kid chasing a tire, having the time of my life, but also worried because sometimes we're going down a hill and sometimes we're going up a hill. Sometimes the tire will fall on its side and you have to pick it up. But it's been an interesting year with Kachihande. So that's how Kachihande came. Accidentally, perfectly, I think. That's kind of how it came.
I love that. I love that. In Africana Women, we've got lots of programs, and we do a lot of asking that question, like, who are you, right? And people like have like total meltdowns and just like, I don't know who I am. Oh my God.
Truly, I used to answer the question like based on like who I am to other people or what I do. And I remember my pastor would say, Nope, not that. Even when you're like, I am a child of God, we are all children of God. Who are you? I am a daughter outside of that. I am a loving sis outside of all. Like, if we strip everything down, what actually remains? And it is the most difficult question to answer, but it's such an important question to answer, because I've actually realized that in those days where you just like feel like nothing, you have to come back and ask yourself, like, who actually am I? And then you also see that actually sometimes that question changes, because when I first answered the question, there was no podcast involved there. There was nothing on the podcast. But now I'm like, wait a minute. I don't know. But I kind of also still see it. I'm like, oh, okay. I'd like to provide platforms for people to just tell a story. Because I think, guys, I miss telling stories. Yeah. So that's how Kachihani came.
So tell me about the story writing then. Okay. As somebody who doesn't, or maybe it makes sense, where, I mean, we've had this conversation where you're like, I don't like to have my picture and my face, you know, and you don't have a lot, but like it's easier to have your words out there. So just tell me about that journey.
So the journey really with stories, I think, started back like as late as 1997. Yeah. Yes, 1997. So I've always, like, in my homework, I was always writing these elaborate stories. And then when I was in grade 6, I wrote the story about my worst enemy. And my mom, who used to check English homework, clearly thought it was a good story. So she said to me, when your teacher marks the book, like, bring it back. My mother used to teach English and religious education in secondary school in the earlier part of her career. So she took my, and I got a good mark out of it, actually, except I didn't draw a nice picture because I can't draw. So she took my story and she read it to grade 11s at the school that she was teaching. And these grades, she came back and said they didn't believe a grade 6 wrote this composition. And just that, I was like, can I write stories? I think I can. I think I can. And then from that right through to secondary school, I kept writing these stories. I was in several failed attempts to have like school magazines. And I think what I always found frustrating about the school magazine thing is they always wanted me to like wrap my stories up in like a nice little ending. I hated that. So then fast forward till like 2016, 2017, I'm having growing pains in my career. And I was just feeling like, guys, am I just a lawyer? Like, for real, what the hell, this thing? And also because, see, when you work for someone, you kind of always feel like you're doing it for them as opposed to for you. So then I started looking for like something that's just mine. Then I needed to break up with someone and I was failing to say it the way I needed to say it. So I wrote it. And this nigga read through this thing and sending me comments like mid-read before he got to the end of where the thing crumbled. And then I was like, wait a minute. Girl, you can write stories. So then I was just like, okay, let me do something, because if I write stories, it's mine. Let's see what this creative brain can do, because my mind will wander, guys. I can create just a complete scenario just from suppositions. So then I started writing. And so initially I would write and then give my friends to read. And everybody was like, put these stories out there. Put these stories out there. And then eventually I was like, okay, fine. I'll start a blog. And I pushed the date, God knows how many months, so many times. And then that's how Here's to Middles came. And Here is to Middles is really based on just like all of us are kind of in the middle, right? But we get to celebrate all these people that are doing these really, really big things. And obviously we hear about the people on the other spectrum. So we tend to focus on these two extremes, you know, maybe on the celebrated side, we have the Obamas of the world, we have, you know, all these people who are doing these big things. And on the other side, we have all the, I don't know, the Hitlers, all these people that have been catastrophic in the world. But we're kind of like in the middle. And there's still so many stories to tell and celebrate in the middle. And at the time, I was feeling very much like, look, I'm just so blah. My career is just there. And I'm just not feeling like I'm winning. So I'm kind of just stuck in the middle. And I was like, but, you know, there's such beauty in the middle as well. I mean, not that you shouldn't aspire to be greater or you should just decide to be on the complete left. But there's still a lot in between. And I used to spend a lot more time on social media. And every time I would read a story and I would go in the comments, I would get charged. Never quite typing my own comments, but then I would look at those things and I'd be like, why are people thinking this way? So then I started writing stories a bit like the folktales grandmothers used to tell us. Like the story was interesting, but there was always this lesson hidden in the characters and in, you know, in the narratives. And I was like, okay, let's give it a go. And the go was going. And that's how the stories kind of started. Yeah.
Have you published?
Not yet. I still, because I'm a little bit old school, I still feel like I would not be satisfied until I can see it in print, like I can touch it with my hands. So I'm still editing. I've been editing for a full year. I had an editor look at it. Feedback is good, but you always need to give yourself like a moment to, because sometimes you read it and you'll be like, how dare you? But what I liked about this editor is, unlike other editors I had encountered, she didn't want me to change my stories. She just said, what she said to me is, build on it because you're actually just scratching the surface with what you can do. And I felt like that's one thing that I think I had missed. So yeah, that's kind of how it was.
Oh, so when can we expect to see the hard copy? Like,
yeah, this has been such a movie. You know what? So, and this is the struggle that I have in wanting to keep my voice. I worry about being published by somebody else. But then you also see that to an extent, you know, when you self-publish, people are a bit, you know, they look at your work a little bit like, oh, well, you know, you self-published. So once I decide which of those two is more important, but I'm hoping that by, because this has been long overdue, but surely by this time next year, it should be in print, guys. All these years of sitting on these stories. I mean, just the other day, I was reading some stories and I was like, what was happening in my life in 2019? Because I was writing some interesting stories. I can't for the life of me remembered where like the mojo came from. But I was writing. But no, we're going to print. We're going to print before the end of next year, for real this time.
How often do you read your stories?
Not as often as I would like to. But I know I read one at least once every 2 weeks because I'm supposed to be writing one once every 2 weeks. So I at least read one once every 2 weeks. But I've been reading the more recent work because I've been feeling like I'm not quite also because you've heard feedback, right? And now I'm trying to like sharpen the skill a little bit more, but I've actually seen that the role tends to sort of read better when I'm just focusing on writing the story as opposed to like focusing on writing. I don't know if that makes sense. I think when I'm more skill focused, I don't like my stories, but when I'm just writing, I tend to enjoy them more. Yeah.
Do you listen to your podcast?
I listen to it when everybody else listens to it first. I don't listen to it before like it goes live because and it doesn't make sense to people, but my own voice irritates me. I'm just like, why does she talk like that? What's wrong with her? Oh, it helps not to, but I do listen. I haven't listened to any of them more than once, strangely enough. So I normally will have no, that's a lie. So because I normally it'll normally drop at midnight. So when it drops, I actually let it play while I'm going to sleep. And then I listen to it on the way to work. So listening to it on the way to work is like when I actually listen to the podcast. Yeah, I'm still dealing with the sound of my voice. Strange as it sounds.
Okay, so tell me about an episode which really stood out to you. Like, yeah, I don't know. I think for me, there are just some episodes that touch me more. And then there are also those episodes which I may not resonate with it as much. But I was telling my team that even if I don't resonate with it, sometimes I still put it out. Because there's still somebody out there who will be like, oh my gosh, like that was amazing. Same thing with the blog, the Africana Woman blog. Yeah, there's some things where you'd be like, ah, okay, this one is like this. And then you put it out and people are like, oh my God, so needed. And you're like, yeah.
And you can't tell. What did you need? What did you need? But so I did, and I think sometimes it's like when I go back and think about like when someone comes back to you and says, oh my goodness, that podcast. But I think my favorite at the moment is still one called Baby Girl, because a young lady came to talk about the complicated relationship with her dad. And I think of the guests I've had, she like bore it all, right? We didn't use her real name. Obviously, I would still like her and her dad to have a good relationship, but she was very honest. And in the episode, I felt like I could see like the struggle that the little girl in her is still having, where you feel like, why do you do this to me? But I love you so much. And I still just want to make you proud. But why do you keep doing this? So it was kind of like a cycle, but you could kind of see it. And I think it was one of those episodes. I wasn't sure how it would be received because obviously culturally, we tend not to be able to call out our parents for their behavior. But I think what shocked me is the women, like the grown women in their 40s and 50s, who said, yep, that's me. Like that is exactly me. I have been, hurt by my father. Others were actually saying like I can't even talk to him about it. But that one, I was like, okay. To be fair, actually, there's two others. I think I have like three favorites, actually. There's also one called Survivor, where a man came to talk about his molestation from his childhood. And men never talk about that. But he came as well, told his story openly, and didn't, like, he didn't hold back either. Talk about the effect of the abuse on a man, the things that he has struggled with post that. And yeah. And then another one is, was talking about fertility and a woman's journey to motherhood. Again, it's those things that, like, we don't talk about them. We really should. And sometimes when we talk about them, it's always from the perspective of, like, up to now, like, what are you waiting for? Or when are you going to have a child? When there could be so much that someone is dealing with in the background. Because even that one, some of the feedback I received was, like, one woman finally was like, maybe let me go and get checked. Another was able to tell just like her mother what her fertility journey was looking like. But all this time, she had, like, been suffering with it in silence. So I think those three. It was supposed to be one, but those three are possibly. Yeah.
Interesting, because I think one of the ones which, you know, when people ask me, like, okay, which one is, like, a memorable one for you, is also a fertility one. So interesting. How do you find your guests?
So the first, for some of the first few episodes, I just literally went in my own phone book, and I'm like, people that I know, what stories do you have? Let's come and talk about them. And then some have found me, actually. Some, it's people actually saying, I want to come and talk about this. Or, you know, yeah, I think I'm ready to talk about it. And I think for some, it's reaching the point. Sorry, my dogs have joined the podcast. I apologize. For some, I do think they've found me, but I think it is, we are getting to the point where I think people are realizing that conversations need to be had. And maybe when they were going through it, they didn't have someone to talk to about it. And they are just no longer satisfied with not providing someone with, like, a listening ear. And which is what was interesting with the fertility story, because she said to me, if anyone actually wants to talk, give them my number. And the funny thing is, like, with some stories finding me, is that there's some episodes which I was ready to record, and then the day of, like, the person was just not in a space where they could talk about it, because obviously for some they're still living it, or, you know, now all of a sudden you're like, I'm actually going to say this out loud, and so that can be the struggle. So yeah. That has, so some I have approached, some it was really like the day of recording, a guest doesn't show up. Like the one I did, there's one called Girl Dad, which has my brother. I literally called him and said, look, a guest can't come. Are you able to just swing by? And he's like, what? I'm like, just come. Let's just come and talk. He's like, what are we going to talk about? I'm like, we'll figure it out. Just come through. So yeah, my friends have been really nice. In that way, but yeah,
bless your friends. I love that. I mean, that's how I started, really, because I was just like, okay, who can I talk to? Hey guys, let's do this thing. You need to help me out.
That's what a village works.
Yeah,
having a village. Yeah,
it's so true. Okay, so as we are winding down, in the Africana woman community, we've got a saying, which is know your roots, grow your purpose. Okay. So I've got four questions for you, and just tell me whatever comes to mind. So the first question is, what are you rooted to?
God, it sounds like it's a copped answer. But yes, my relationship with God is possibly the strongest roots that I have. And I think that just sort of affects everything else. I think it's in God I have found my purpose. It's in God that I have found my strength, my shield, my sanity. Yeah, because of just how my relationship with God has been. It's like I said, I think it's where I found my purpose. It's where I found my strength, my shield, but also I think my safe space. And I think I believe in safe spaces. Because safe spaces allow you to come as you are, but not to leave as you came, right? Because once, like, a lot of us struggle with having a place where you can just go and say what you need to say, be how you need to be without feeling judged, right? And because for me, my revelation of God was from the perspective of him being a friend that sticks closer to a brother, I think that having that kind of relationship has been really helpful for me in the different stages of my life and my faith. And so that is my strongest root. And I think my family, because I think the values, they are generally the first people that share my stuff. Sometimes I'm like, have you even listened to this thing that you're sharing? But they have been those people who, again, whether I like it or not, it's a place I can go and hide. It's a place where I can go and, like, I will be reminded of, like, who am I? And what can I do? Because I think they had to be the ones who listened to all the little dreams and aspirations in the first place. And sometimes when you feel like you're going off course, I have been privileged to have parents and brothers who will be like, oh, but you said that you wanted to. And then you're like, okay, let me get back on track. So I think that's where I'm rooted, in God and in my family. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I was laughing when you were saying that your revelation of God is one as a friend, right? Because there's some people who, like, get offended the way I talk to God. Like, he's not your friend. And I'm like, but he is.
It says he's a friend that sticks closer than a brother. And for me, even, it's like, how? You know, I'll get in the car and I'll be like, yo, Lord, did you see that mess? And I'll be like, listen, this is how it's been. This is how it's been. So yeah.
I love that.
I mean, and sometimes you, like, people are so far removed, they just see him as just this judge. Look, he's all in all. So of course he's that as well. But you see, to walk with God, I feel like you need to experience, because he's just not one thing. He's so many things. And to just limit him to that, I feel like, is cutting yourself short. But he's a friend who sticks closer than a brother, Shane. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So the next question, what are your favorite ways to nourish your mind, your body, and your soul?
Okay. To nourish my mind. So I like to isolate a lot, and today I found the scripture that validates me hiding. I'm so pleased with it, because now I can just say, you see, I'm just like Jesus. I sometimes need to step away. But I feel like to recharge, I need to be removed and from just everything. So before people started talking about self-care, I was like, I already do that, where I need to step away to clear my mind. And again, it's these conversations with this friend who sticks closer than a brother, where I can just stop. And because I feel like sometimes I'm pulled in so many directions, to be able to step away and just stop and just be like, okay, breathe. That's possibly where it works. And Shane, because I love food, of course, good food is really good for my body. As are massages and facials, but where the budget doesn't allow, the budget will always allow for food, and good food at that. So, yeah. And my soul, I like to hear from people who are just bearing it. Right. So I will, even when I'm looking for, like, content to watch, obviously I do like my series where I don't have to, like, be thinking about the deep things in life. But I also just like to, I like to hear stories. I like to hear people's stories. So a lot of what I would like, when I need to just like refresh myself, I need to go to places where I will hear people talking in the real space about just living. And sometimes it's small things, like how someone said, guys, for 3 months in a row, I managed to pay all my bills. And they would tell the story of how they got to that place. And sometimes you'll be like, guys, bills are the moral thing to do. But when you hear someone tell their story, it's stories. So I think, yeah, I refresh my soul with stories.
Do you have a weakness that has now become a superpower?
Do I have? Yes. It's really... So my therapist says, and when he first said it, I was so offended. When he said, oh, you tend to catastrophize things. I said, are you calling me a drama queen? But I think my mind has this way of taking a small little thing. And this, I say this as, so I struggle with insomnia and my mind just struggles to shut down. Right. But I've realized that when I can harness my mind away from the catastrophizing, it can do just amazing things. So the catastrophizing, you know, once I was thinking about something that I asked someone to do, it related to their sibling. And I said, you know, thinking about it when I came home, I'm like, I can't believe I asked him to do that for his sibling. And I was like, if I had to do that for one of my siblings, I don't know, I feel like my heart would break. And there I was cooking and thinking about this scenario. If I was the one in that place, and oh my God. Next thing, I'm like, are tears falling down my face from just imagining a situation? Like, what's wrong with you? But my mind can do that. I think it can evoke a physiological reaction, which now I'm able to like, let's make a story now and let's write it down. So just creating that imagery. So the catastrophizing is not all bad. It is it if you nurture it into the right thing, it can work. And I think that has become, the stories are a huge part of, I think, what I believe are now my superpowers.
Okay, so the final question is, what do you know as a certainty?
What do I know as a certainty? Yeah. Today, because, you know, it's been the first and, you know, this morning we're having this conversation, that God is good. But outside of that, what I know for sure is that God is good. And like today, sometimes looking around, and I think even looking at my life, because I was doing an inventory of the year. And I had to be honest. I said, Lord, I feel like I've come up short. In the sense that I just don't think that I won. Which sometimes I think I have to admit that, you know, people be like, oh, you're hard on yourself and stuff like that. But when you had mapped up something and then you kind of look, I mean, I was even saying to God, like, I feel bad in some places. I feel like my gratitude list is, you know, where like, my hair grew, you know, you feel like you're putting small lists. But I think in all of that, what I came to the conclusion of is that truly God is good. So I know that for certainty, right? But another thing I know for certain is that each person, regardless of how they are, where they are, what they're doing, they have something in them that is like uniquely spectacular. So that's other than the God is good. I truly believe like every single person has that thing in them, which is uniquely spectacular. Like, and I think in it, it's almost like how each one of us has a unique fingerprint, even identical twins. It's not like 100%. And that's my firm belief that because of the fingerprint alone is the is the evidence that every single person, regardless of like right now, they may be deplorable, but every single person has something in them that is uniquely spectacular. Sometimes people never get to know what that is, or they never get to develop, but every single one of us has that in us. Yeah.
Cool. I won't go on a tangent on that. I will refrain myself. But Chimba, this has been such a good conversation. Please let the audience know, how do they find you? How do they support you? And as we're going to be waiting for that book. Why are you waiting?
You can read my stories on Facebook. If you go to Here Is to Middles, and so here as in H-E-R-E is to Middles, and it'll come up as Here Is to Middles, a collection of short stories by Chishimba Kachasa. There's also a blog that you can access on www.hereistomiddles.com. Then obviously please listen to my podcast on on Google Podcasts, on Anchor, and on Apple Podcasts. I also have an Instagram page called Catchy Handy. And please bear with me, guys. I am learning social media. Sometimes I just feel ugh, but please don't judge my Instagram page based on how it's growing. But the podcasts are better than the Instagram page, so don't worry, you're good.
Goodness. All right. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much for your wisdom. I have enjoyed this conversation. And yeah, it's been good.
No, thank you so much for having me. It's truly a privilege to, because, and sometimes people say that and you're like, nah, it's a script, guys. To be on an award-winning podcast, whether it's like to be asked questions like, what did you have for, it's a big deal. When we were at the APVA Awards, I was like, Lord, what am I doing here? I feel so unqualified. There are people who've been doing this for a long time and their stuff is good. You know, when I went to listen to your podcast, I said, hey, my dear, you're playing games. There's people doing this thing seriously. Pull up your socks. So, no, but well done. You're doing such amazing things. I can't wait to be like you when I grow up in my podcast.
Ah, man, that day was so much fun, though. And I was just like, oh, you know, when they were like announcing that category, I was like, no, because I was rooting for you. Oh, my gosh. But yeah.
Coming to that, I was telling my friends, I'm like, bruh, people don't know that the nomination for me is the award because this is year one. I'm not expecting anything. It's the nomination. And then they announced their category. I was like, wait, could it happen? No. You knew. Because I had to have like manager expectations.
Right. Yeah.
Because the big deal for me was actually, I'm like, guys, people are listening to this thing.
Mm.
How are they doing that? So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well done.
But you know how I heard about your podcast was through a friend in the States. Yeah. So she's like, oh, there's this podcast that's called Catchy Hande. Like, it's really cool. So, yeah. So, I mean, I've been following you. So, I think your work is amazing. And I'm rooting for you all the way. And thank you for your kind words.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
I love talking to fellow podcasters, particularly about their process, right? I don't know if you noticed me geeking out, but anyway. And I love that Chishimba brought up the question, who are you? Beyond the titles and roles, who are you really? The beauty of getting to the core of that question is, like Chishimba demonstrated, you can be many things and that's okay. I think it's so unfortunate when people believe that they have to stay boxed into a job or a career or definition just because that's what they went to school for when they were teenagers. Sis, that was 30 years ago. Ha. You are allowed to evolve. Set yourself free. Well,
If you really want to get to the bottom of that question, who are you? Make sure you attend any Africana Woman retreat event or course. We will help you, my sister. We will help you find your unique answer. So please give Chishimba her roses. Find her on Instagram at Kachihande. Find Kachihande on your favorite podcast app. Subscribe and listen. It is amazing. Please tell Chishimba you heard her on the Africana Woman podcast. And yeah, tell her what you learned, all right? The best way to support Africana Woman is to share the podcast with somebody. Send them the link and let them know there is an amazing community over here. You can find us across all socials at Africana Woman. So the Africana Woman podcast is part of the Africana Woman Network. My name is Chulu, your host. Speak to you in the next episode.